Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes. This is another in our ongoing series, The Week in Reviews, a chance to sit down one-on-one with someone involved in the literary world. My guest today is author Stephen, although I believe he prefers to be called Steve Billings. Steve has just published his very first novel, Real Cops Wear Uniforms and Ride in Patrol Cars. Steve, welcome to the program, and thank you for taking time out to talk to us.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
Maybe we can start with a little background. Who is Steve Billings?
Well, I grew up in Houston, Texas, and decided I wanted to be a police officer and got my first police job in Deer Park PD, which is a small city right next to Houston. And then I transferred over to Houston where I did the bulk of my police career and retired from there as a patrol sergeant after 24 total years with Houston.
Wow.
And during my police career, I went back to college and got my bachelor's degree in history. I did not want to get it in criminal justice. I figured I did enough of that 40 hours a week.
Why history? Where was the, or what is the attraction?
I'm not really sure. I've just always been interested in history, and not necessarily current history. My favorite era is the end of the Roman Republic. 2,000 years ago. It just always fascinated me, the things they were able to do walking everywhere. They didn't have carts or anything.
But that is really, really curious. I also happen to be a huge fan of history, although my favorite period is the Cold War. There's just something amazing about the Cold War and the spies.
Yes. Yeah.
I am correct. Real Cops is your first foray into the book world?
Yes, it is. My first novel.
Obviously, the idea for it came from your time as being a police officer. What though, made you decide to take that leap into becoming an author?
Well, I'll... through my adult life and while being a police officer, my wife and I would go to different social gatherings, parties, whatever, and people would ask me how the job was going, and I would tell them some of the things that happened to me, and they would all say, oh, you should write a book someday. And I think every policeman gets that, you should write a book someday. And when I got towards the end of my career, I said, well, what would be wrong if I actually tried? So I started writing down a few of my war stories and put them together to see if I could make it work out throughout a book, and I think I did okay with it.
Oh, I think you have done just a fabulous job with Real Cops. I mean, I enjoyed it cover to cover.
Thank you.
I love the plot, but without giving away any spoilers, can you just sort of kind of set the scene for us?
Yes, the... main character is a patrolman who's had some recent personal problems, issues, whatever you want to call them, and he's just now coming back to doing the job the way he knows it should be done and getting back to himself, as it were. And a female officer who's working a specialized division through a procedural infraction on her part gets sent back to patrol, and she's not happy about it. And not only is she not happy about it, but she has to be retrained in patrol where she doesn't want to be in the first place. And they start off a little bit of tension, but they start getting along better as the book goes on. It's about her getting reoriented and the things that happens to her and him while they're riding around in the patrol car.
Real Cops paints a very, very different picture than what was shown on the popular TV shows. And one that I suspect is probably more true to life. Am I correct in thinking that it's not all guns and luminol. You know, it's more a question of acting as a mediator and making wise decisions.
Yes, mostly common sense, I think. And yes, it's not all guns. It's a lot of it is just boredom and one thing after another, and one call kind of gets to be like another. But every now and then, you get a curveball thrown at you, and it was the curveballs that I really tried to put into the book.
Right, and some of the stories are just magic. I mean, I love the warring lesbians, and you know, the plates being thrown off the balcony.
Yes, that's an actual incident that happened while I was working at Deer Park. And in those days, when I first started the police work, not everybody had even a walkie-talkie. When I worked for Deer Park, there was one unit in the city that got to get a walkie-talkie. Everybody else had used radios in the car. So if you got a call, you got out of the car. If you didn't get back in a couple of hours to let somebody know we were okay, they would start sending units out to wherever your last location was. It's funny how much police work has changed. Now they have the computers in all the cars, and it's constant communication at all times. When I started, they didn't even have that. So I kind of had to put everything happen today so that I could use all the current equipment, even though back then it didn't. There were no walkie-talkies.
Right. Just for our listeners, I should tell you about this little vignette. The deal is that there are two lesbians that have had a bit of a falling out. One has locked herself in the bedroom, and the other has grabbed every plate in the kitchen, and she has lots, and is standing on the balcony, and anything that moves, including the police, are a target for a frisbee plate.
Oh, she was good with those. She was good with those plates too. She put them right where she wanted to.
Right.
You know, you don't think about a plate being a weapon, but if you think about it, they weigh, you know, pound on pound and a half a piece, and like I said, coming at you like a frisbee, they could hurt you.
Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah.
And I believe in the book you liken her to a major league pitcher. You know, she was definitely quite accurate.
Yes. Yeah, she's real good. Yeah, Nolan Ryan is who I made the reference to.
Right.
You know, he's from Texas, so I had to go with Nolan.
I have a friend. He's actually an ex-FBI guy, Terry Turchi, and he led the hunt for Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber, and did actually find him. He also headed up the hunt for the Olympic bomber, Eric Rudolph. Talking to him, basically, the bottom line is police work. And okay, the FBI is slightly different from, you know, being a patrolman, is really a lot of hard work and maybe just a little bit of luck. Is that your theory as well?
Maybe in investigations, which is what FBI mostly does is investigations. They don't do street crime like I did. It was most of the time when you're in patrol, there's little guesswork that goes on. When you get there, it's pretty obvious what's going on and who's at fault. And you just, like I said, you use your common sense and take whoever needs to go to jail to jail. Not a lot of investigating that goes on in the patrol car. It's all pretty much laid out for you when you get there. If it has to be worked on long term to find out where the culprit is, then you would turn in a report to investigations, and they would take care of it.
When I'm not wearing my reviewer hat, I tend to wear a journalist hat, and I'm involved in a couple of reasonably high-profile cases at the moment. And it seems to me that the press and the police sometimes have a bit of an uneasy relationship. Has that been your experience?
Yes, and I'm not sure it's the media's fault as far as I'm concerned. You were told in the academy that only certain people should talk to the press because they only want certain information getting out. And they also throw in there every time that the media, if they can find a way to make you look bad, they're going to do it. So just if anybody asks you a question with a camera, refer them to the public information office. So we were all, it was all drilled into our heads. If you make any kind of comment that can be construed somehow as anti-department, well, of course, the department's going to have to let you go. So if anybody comes up to us with a camera, we make the sign of the cross like you're a vampire and get away from me kind of thing. And like I said, it's not the media's fault. It's just the way we were instructed.
Yeah, I think in some ways it makes a huge amount of sense. You don't want three or four people telling three or four different stories. Yeah. But yeah, there's the frustration aspect as well.
Oh, I imagine I've frustrated a lot of the media people who just wanted a simple instruction. You know, is the guy over there in handcuffs, is he the guilty one? Well, I can't tell you that. You're going to have to call the information office. Well, that's insane. He's in handcuffs, for crying out loud.
Right.
But that's just, I didn't, and a lot of policemen don't want to make any kind of comment where they might get departmentally whacked with a day off or something for making comments they weren't allowed to say.
Right. I have to admit that I have a little bit of a sadistic streak. And I always love to ask new authors about their publishing experiences. I'm sure that you thought the really hard bit was writing the book, but I'm sure that you discovered that this was just the first hurdle. Publishing is a major issue. Did you try the traditional routes before going into the self-publishing world?
Actually, I have a friend who writes textbooks. And when I finished my novel and got ready to shop it around, went out to eat with him and his wife and my wife, and we kicked it around, and he thought that the best way to go would be self-publishing because it just thoughts that he had, I thought it would be better. So not having any idea what to do myself, I just followed his advice and went with a publishing company that he and another friend of his, who, like I said, they're both in the biz, as it were, suggested.
Yeah, and I think that's probably a very wise decision on your behalf. I mean, I've heard horror stories of people spending a year, even 2 years, just trying to find an agent, never mind a publisher. it gets ugly early.
I guess I was very lucky. I sent it to the publishers they recommended, and they picked it right up, said they liked it, and they were ready to go with it if I was. I was very pleasantly surprised until, of course, now that it's out, now I find out that, as you said, writing it was the easiest part of this whole process. Now comes the marketing part of the process.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a babe. I was an absolute babe in the woods. Here I got a publisher, and my book's ready to go. I was just ready to sit back and rake in the royalty checks. Oh, no, it doesn't work like that.
No, there's another step. You've got your book published. Now you have to sell it.
Sell it, yes.
And there are two dreaded M words, marketing and money.
Oh, yeah.
What are you doing marketing-wise? Are you doing book signings, that kind of thing?
The book signings are going to be next on my list. I've kind of mapped out a little process here that I'm trying. Of course, your show here was right up on the top of my list there, and I'm very appreciative of it. I thank you very much.
Oh, my pleasure.
But the book signings will come later. I don't know what else I'm going to do after that.
Where can people buy copies of Real Cops?
Well, since it is self-published, they don't put them in bookstores, so you have to order it online. And right now, Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
Okay. The internet is a very, very important tool for an author. Do you have a website supporting the book or a personal website?
Outskirts Press is my publisher, and they have their web address there. You can get to my book through their web address, and you can get in touch with me through there. They have a link to go to get to me.
Okay, and I'll make sure I include that link in my text wrap-up.
Thank you.
I'm sure that you've shared your book with some of your former colleagues. What do they think of it?
So far, everything's been positive that I've gotten back from them. I'm very happy about that. I had one real good friend. He spent a lot of time in investigations, and I thought he might have a problem, especially with the title, because he always thought he was a policeman too. But I meant something different by the title. But he seems to have liked it. I've gotten nothing but positive results so far.
How about just regular readers? Are you getting any feedback from them?
I'm very happy. Like I said, all the reviews that have been put on the book sites, Barnes & Noble and Amazon, have been positive. I'm blessed. I don't understand it. I'm very happy about it, though. You never know when you get something published to put out that you think there's going to be some bad reviews, but I haven't got any yet.
Well, I can tell you this. I read more books than should be legal. way more books than should be legal. And I was very impressed with Real Cops. I mean, it's well presented. You do a good job on character development, plot development. I mean, you know, the book grows on you. You know, you're gripped from page one, yeah, and you're just hooked.
Good. That's what I was hoping for. My wife wants me to start writing a sequel, and some of the guys I used to work with, there's a character in the book named Pops that I knew when I put him in there, I would start getting phone calls from guys I worked with 30 years ago, and they are calling me. And you wouldn't believe the amount of people who want to tell me they are the people responsible for giving Pops his nickname of Pops. He was called that from the day I got there, and he was the oldest officer on night shift. I thought that's why he was called Pops. But there are so many different stories that it's comical to me, the people that I get phone calls from, people I never heard of, saying, yeah, I'm Officer So-and-so, and I used to work Park Place way back when, and I gave him that nickname. I said, okay. I've got two others that say they did it, but okay.
Actually, I really liked the character Pops. I mean, he was just
I did not do him justice either. He was a real character from the day one.
He was even more cynical than what you portray in the book.
Oh, much more cynical, and just a fun guy to be around. He rescued a dog, and he would bring it to work with him, and he claimed it was a better dog for catching burglars than the canine corps. And the dog was about the size of a chihuahua, and he would take that dog on calls with him, and run calls with him, and you can't do that. It's against all the rules, but nobody ever, it's just Pops. Everybody just smiled and went, okay, that's your canine dog.
Actually, on the subject of dogs, particularly chihuahuas, I was sat outside my house this morning, and we have a couple of oak trees, and there was this little chihuahua-ish dog. I'm not sure it was pure chihuahua, just minding its own business, walking down the street. The wind blew, and an acorn beamed it right on the head.
Oh,
man, was it upset.
I've noticed chihuahuas all have, every chihuahua I've ever seen has a chip on its shoulder.
Right.
I don't know why. It's a little dog syndrome, I guess.
I guess. So my next question was going to be, you know, it's not unusual for an author to create characters from people he's known, usually not one single person, but a, you know, a caricature of several people glued together into a character. Clearly that is what you did.
Well, the main character, of course, was I always considered it to be me. And the female in the book is a total invention, because all the calls in the book I ran personally. And not all the time did I have a female or any partner at all. And rarely did I have a female. There's just not a lot of women in patrol. I don't know why. They just usually they navigate. They do their training and then they go somewhere else to do their careers. They just don't stay in patrol for some reason. But she was just an invention of me.
Right. And I do love the characters. And you do such a great job of painting them in words. You know, you get to know these people.
Well, I tried.
But
I've also tried to make the book so that everything that happened in the book is on duty. Nothing ever happens that's not on duty. I did that intentionally, and I think that helped me focus on the characters.
Mm-hmm. But there is a section that caught my attention. I'm sure that most people would just gloss over it, but I spent over 6 years working with the homeless. I ran a computer lab out of a very, very large homeless shelter that slept something like 1,100 people a night.
Wow.
And I watched the interaction between the police and the homeless, and it was fairly frequent, but for the most part, the police preferred to counsel and mediate rather than prosecute. What's your dealings with the homeless?
Of course, all of mine is anecdotal. I didn't spend a lot of time on the homeless problem. I just responded to calls that I got. The homeless that I ran into, because I got calls on them, were the ones who preferred not to get help from anybody. They preferred to stay out on street corners and beg for money, and then they would sleep under the bridges at night. But I usually did not have a problem with them when I got to wherever they were at. Now, you know, if they're not supposed to be standing in the streets, they would understand, okay, I've got to stay off the street and on the curb, and they would do that. They would pretty much follow the rules once you came by, once they knew you were watching them. And it was rare that I had to get into any kind of physical confrontation with them. They just did not want to live by anybody else's rules. They preferred to stay out on the street where they could get their money and slip under the bridge and do whatever they wanted.
I think the only really disturbing aspect that I saw was an apparent blind eye toward drugs. I saw way too many crackheads. In fact, the building I worked in, I was on the sixth floor, and I'd look out and I could see the business unfolding, shall we say. That there are dealers, there are runners, and there are buyers. You know, the buyer hands over the $20 to the runner runs to the dealer, gets the rock and runs back. You know, transaction done. And, we're talking about a downtown situation in a city of over 1 million. The police would periodically drive by, and everyone would melt into the woodwork.
Yes, yes, I would get calls from people in the neighborhood saying, that guy down the street selling drugs. And I would just have to tell them, I don't doubt it, but when I drive by in my police car, he's got lookouts. And he knows I'm coming a quarter mile before I get there, and everybody's got their drugs hidden, and nothing's going on by the time I get there. I'm hampered by the fact that I'm in this patrol car. So the drugs being sold out of the neighborhoods is not much that the patrol level can do, because we're always seen way before we get there. Now, the narcotics divisions tell me they don't want to mess with the local drugs because they want the suppliers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's a political thing or not. People don't want their little Johnny sells drugs on the weekend kind of thing going to jail when they should be putting his suppliers in jail. Maybe it's a political thing. I don't know. But they're not out there at the street level taking the locals out off to jail. It's always been that way. But there's not much a patrolman in his car can do, because they're always gone by the time we get there.
Right. Actually, what amused me and annoyed me in the same breath was that I would catch a bus and then a light rapid transit train across town, and I had something like a four block walk to work, and there was the very last block there was an overpass, and under it was the favorite spot. Everyone knew who I was. Everyone would say, "Hello, Simon." And everyone would be puffing on a joint or sucking on a glass bowl.
Yeah.
And they just did not care. You know, we had a zero tolerance policy in the building, but 7:30 in the morning, we'll be fine.
I don't know what it is. I'm not sure the world on drugs is working if they're not willing to go out and arrest everybody that's doing illegal drugs. I don't understand the theory behind it, but then again, I was always just a patrolman, and I'm not supposed to understand these things.
Right. Oh, okay. I managed to digress. That's my speciality.
Okay.
You know, it doesn't matter if it's a review or an interview. Somehow I always manage to get off topic and into some story mode.
That's fine.
Do you have another book in the works? You know, authors are a bit like crackheads. One hit is never enough.
Well, I actually have a few stories, but I are in my head running around. They're mostly science fiction. If I go back to the police again, it would probably be equal to this one that I've got. I've already, like I said, started to get stories that I could put in another book, and my wife wants me to. I'm just not sure what I want to do yet.
Oh, and I genuinely think you should. I think you have the writing bug. And what absolutely amazed me was how well written Real Cops is. You know, it's not written like a police report. I mean, have you taken any classes in writing?
No, actually. Except my college was all in history. I had to write term papers for that, but none of them were like this. I don't know where it came from. I was very lucky. It came out the way I wanted it to. I have no idea how I started to get there, but I got there. I even sometimes try to think, how did I do that? But I can't bring it to my mind specifically.
Much of Real Cops is really quite quite humorous. Looking back at your tenure, what is your absolute favorite story?
Well, the The plate thrower is right up there. She's right up at the top. Now, I know there's another one involves something that happened to me, but I don't think I could talk about it over the radio. It's just something that happened to me while I was searching for a burglar.
Okay.
I could probably keep it pretty clean. If you get a minute, I was searching for a burglar, and we knew there was two of them in the house, and we found one pretty quick. Now, we had had to wait outside before we could get in the house. It was in a house. We had had to wait 2 or 3 hours. It was cold, drizzly, rainy, and I had to go to the bathroom. I had to go. Now, we found one burglar, but we couldn't find the other. So I told the rest of the policemen, I'll be right back. I know they've got a bathroom in the house. I'll go in there, and I'll be right back. So I was walking into the bathroom, and I had zipped, and I had gotten ready to go, and the other burglar was standing in the bathroom. I don't know how we missed him, but now he was standing in the bathroom. And he looked at me, and his eyes got as wide as he could be. Well, I just pointed at him with what I had in my hand, and I said, "Freeze." And he looked at me and said, "Don't shoot." But I did not have my gun in my hand. And for months after that, I had guys come up to me and said, "Okay, exactly how do you search a building again?" And then I'd have to slap them, you know, and threaten to kill them and all kinds of things. It's just automatic reflexes. When you see a burglar, you say "freeze," and he says "don't shoot." That's just the way it is. It didn't occur to me that that probably wasn't the right time for that expression.
Oh, you should have put that in the book.
Maybe the next one.
That is too
funny. Now that the book is over with, I start remembering other stories that, you know, I probably could have put that in there. Maybe the next one, that kind of thing. I could probably write a whole book with nothing but the things Pops did that I saw.
I really like Pops. You bring him to life. And I a really, really interesting and set in his ways guy.
Oh, yeah, he's definitely a product of the 50s.
Definitely a product of the 50s. alas, I'm being whined at by my producer. Our time is up. Steve, I want to really, really thank you for taking time to talk to us this afternoon. I mean, it has been a wonderful, wonderful interview.
Oh, I appreciate it. Pleasure's been all mine.
Okay, this is Simon Barrett for Blogger News Network, wishing everyone a great Friday and a great weekend. And I'm sure we'll all be talking again soon. Goodbye.
Thank you.